So you've heard Alan's story, and my story is actually in the manual, so I'm not going to go into that too much. But I wanted to start off just by telling you this story, a lady that I prayed with. And she had come to me because of, I don't even really remember what her presenting issue was, just stress or pressure in her life. She knew something wasn't right. She was a Christian, and she wasn't experiencing that life of God that Alan was talking about. So she came to me for freedom prayer. So I just asked Jesus to lead her, and what she remembered was being told that her mother had tried to abort her before she was born. She also, her father was a very hard, harsh person, so he was growing up in that household, in that environment, with her father who was verbally abusive, and then knowing that her mom didn't want her, she had come to believe, it had just always been that way for her, that she was supposed to die. And we didn't get to that right away, but eventually that's where we ended up, was that she just believed that I'm going to die. That's how, that she was living with that inside her heart all the time. And there were all, because that had been there for so long, there were lots of ways that she managed that pain, lots of ways that she coped with it. And as we went through those, and we'll talk more about that later when we're talking about how to do freedom prayer, but eventually she saw this picture, and she, because I asked her, God, to show her what all these things that she was doing, that bad fruit that she was experiencing, was causing her to feel like she had to protect herself all the time. And so I asked the Lord to show her what that looked like in her life, and God showed her a picture. And in this picture, she was standing there with this big umbrella, and she's holding this big black umbrella over herself, and she always has to keep hold of this umbrella because she has to protect herself. And so I asked the Lord, you know, what he wanted her to do, and eventually she came to the point where she agreed with God that that wasn't a good idea, that she could trust him to protect her. And so I prayed, and I asked God to come again, and that was the point where she encountered Jesus, because what she saw in this other picture, after she had made a decision to lay this umbrella down, she saw that Jesus' hand was over her, and Jesus' hand was the one that was protecting her. And so all of the bad fruit that she was experiencing, all that anxiety, all that need to protect herself was gone just in a moment, just from that encounter with Jesus. Those are the kinds of things that we see all the time, and that seed principle is really the foundation for freedom prayer, for what we're going to talk about tonight. And Alan kind of alluded to it before, that at any point when we make a decision to do things our own way, then we start down that path that leads to death. And when I say death, yes, physical death, but there's all kinds of death, right? There's a living death, this living hell that we can live in where all that bad fruit is, where I'm experiencing death to, like, maybe my relationships. And even at the point that I am starting down that path that leads to death and I'm doing things my own way, I'm also allowing the enemy access into my life, right? So there's demonic oppression. And so there's a lot. That seed that begins to grow and produces bad fruit, it eventually leads to death. And so when I say death, I'm including it all. I'm including those bad feelings. I'm including the bondage that comes with that, the demonic oppression, the bad habits, the compulsive behaviors, all of that. When I say death, I mean all of that. So let's look a little bit more closely at another foundational principle that we found out that really comes into play when we're talking about freedom prayer. And it's that whole idea of doing it my own way, of independence. And I just want to take you back to Genesis. Let's go back to the very beginning and just look at a little bit of just some scripture here. In Genesis, when it said that God made man, he made man in his own image. God created man in his own image. And he blessed them, and he said, be fruitful and increase in number and fill the earth. This is Genesis 1, 26 through 28. And he told them to rule over the fish of the sea and the birds of the air and over every living creature that moves on the ground. So there's two things in that scripture that I want you to see. Number one, we're created in God's image. So that means that we're good. if I'm created in God's image, that means that I'm good. I'm not I'm not a lousy, cringing sinner that has to beg at the feet of Jesus, because God created me in his image and he made me good. The second thing that I want you to see there is that he created us to have dominion. And dominion is really kind of an old word. It's like, what does that mean? But it's like he created me to rule. He created me to have authority over my life and to rule over this earth. He put Adam and Eve in charge of this garden to rule over it, to take care of it. And he gave them the authority to do that. But then something happened. And in Genesis 3, Satan comes to the woman and tempts her. And this is Genesis 3, 4 through 6. But the serpent says, "For God knows when you eat of this fruit, your eyes will be open, and you will be like God, knowing good and evil." And when the woman saw that the fruit of the tree was good for food and pleasing to the eye, and also desirable for gaining wisdom, she took some of it and ate it, and also gave some to her husband who was with her, and he ate it. So here's the thing. God set this up, and he gave Adam and Eve rule and dominion over the earth, and he had a plan. He wanted them to manage this little piece of property in partnership with him, in union with him. They were already created in his image. They didn't need to be anything else. But Satan comes to Adam and Eve, and he says, "No, if you really want to do a good job with this thing that God told you to do, you need something else. You're not qualified. You're not good enough. You don't have what you need to do what God told you to do." And they believed him. They thought they needed something else. And what they thought they needed was wisdom. What they thought they needed was, if I only knew what to do, if I only knew what to do, then I would do what was right. So there's two trees in the Garden of Eden. There's the tree of life, and there's the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Just like with the seed principle, there's where the tree of life is, there's truth. This is the truth about me. It's the truth about my relationship with God. When I'm connected with him, then all of these fruits that are on the tree of life just happen. It's like what Galatians said, right? The fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, patience, goodness, gentleness, self-control. But how many of us as Christians have tried really hard to be patient? And yet the Bible tells us that when I'm in union with God, patience is not something I work hard for. It just happens. It's a fruit. It just happens. I don't have to work hard to be kind. I don't have to work hard to be good, because when I'm connected with Jesus, then the fruit of my life is going to be goodness. The fruit of my life is going to be gentleness. The fruit of my life is going to be self-control. I don't have to work hard to be self-controlled. I just am self-controlled because of who I'm connected to. Now, on the other side, we've got the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And the fruit of this tree is anxiety, pressure, no joy, no peace, trouble with my relationships, depression, anger. I mean, the list could go on. Addictive behavior, bad habits. A lot of times I think what happens is we try to pluck the fruit off of this tree, but we're still connected to this source. And so the fruit just keeps popping out and keeps popping out and keeps popping out. And in a way, that's good news. If you know how to look at it, if I know that these things are in my life because of a source, and I stop trying to pull the bad fruit, because pulling the bad fruit is exhausting, and it never works anyway, because the fruit just gets bigger and bigger and bigger, right? But looking at it this way, if I see bad fruit in my life, then what does that tell me? Somewhere there's a seed that's been planted in my heart. if I will allow Jesus to take me back to where that seed is, and Jesus pulls the seed out, then there's no more bad fruit. No more bad fruit. No more, you mean an addiction can be broken in an instant because Jesus pulls the seed out? Absolutely. I've seen it happen over and over and over again. You mean lifelong depression can just be over in an instant because Jesus plucks the seed out? Yes, because I've seen it happen over and over and over again. No more medication, no more therapy. It just happens once you get to the seed. But here's one of the keys about this thing. One of the big deals for me when I started to see this is the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Okay, it was easy for me to understand that these seeds in my heart, that some of them were, they were evil. Like, I know that I don't want to lie, you know. I know that I don't want to cheat people. I know that I don't want to steal. I mean, I don't want to live this way. You know, I know those things are bad. I don't want to do that. I don't want to be angry. Okay? But it's also this knowledge of good. I thought that reading my Bible was a good thing. I thought that prayer was a good thing. I thought that, you know, giving money, giving my time, giving myself to other people was a good thing. But here's the problem. I thought those were good things to do the way I thought I needed to do it in order to produce the effect that I thought I needed. Do you see the problem there? I'm doing it all on my own without any input from the Holy Spirit. Now, it's not that I'm against reading your Bible. It's not that I'm against praying. That's not true. But what I'm saying is that when I'm connected with Jesus, I don't have to work at those things. I don't have a list of things that I'm having to do or not do. When I'm connected with him, there's only going to be good things that come in my life, and there's only going to be a good product that comes out. But so many times when I've sat down to pray for people, I'll hear people say that, if I only knew what to do. And it's a lot of our issues come from trying to maintain control, or trying to maintain a protection, or trying to maintain something and doing it in our own strength and in our own way. And that is from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And it will always produce bad fruit. So let's look at Jesus. In Luke 4, 5 through 7, this is where Satan comes and he tempts Jesus and he leads him out into the wilderness. And at one point during this temptation, the devil took Jesus up to a high place, and he said that the devil showed Jesus all of the kingdoms of the earth in a moment. And he said, I will give you all their authority and splendor, for it has been given to me, and I can give it to anyone I want to. So if you worship me, it will be yours. Now what I want you to see here is that was true. All of the kingdoms of the earth had been turned over to Satan when Adam and Eve took that fruit. When they stepped into that independence and they decided that they could decide for themselves what was good and evil and that they could do this their own way, at that point, that's what Satan wanted. He wanted them to voluntarily give that dominion that God had given them over to him. And when he convinced them to disobey God, they turned that dominion that they had over the earth that God had legitimately given them, they turned it over to Satan, and they gave it to him. So now here Satan is tempting Jesus, and he says, look, I know that you've come here to get all this back, and I'll give it to you if you just worship me. Because Satan knew what Jesus was there for, too. Now here's the key point. Jesus, when he came at this time when Satan's tempting him, I know Jesus was the Son of God, but at this point in Philippians 2, it says that Jesus had voluntarily emptied himself of all of the power that came with being God. And when Jesus came, he came as a man. He was fully human. He didn't pull his God card and take any special privileges in this walk that he determined to walk out on earth. He did it exactly the way you and I did it. He was connected with the Father exactly the way you and I are. That means that he had to have a life in God that was just like the life we have in God. he was listening to the Father when Satan tempted him. And it's like, God, Father, is that the path you want me to choose? And the Father said, no, don't take that bait. That's bad. I don't know how that conversation went on. I just know that Jesus was connected with the Father. And he answered Satan. And from the very moment, all of Jesus' life, when he was on this earth, he did things just that way, by being connected with God, by having this constant flow, this constant unbroken relationship between him and the Father. And he only did what the Father did, and he only said what the Father told him to say. And because he did that completely right, he got back all of that authority that Adam and Eve had turned over in the Garden of Eden. What an amazing thing when Jesus rose and then he came and he talked to the disciples and he said, all authority has been given to me. All authority has been given to me. He said, guys, I got it back. What you lost, I got back. What humanity lost, I got back. And now I'm giving it to you. Go out and tell everybody else. And that is one of the most exciting things about Freedom Prayer, is getting people back into that relationship with God, coming back into that place where through relationship with God, I have dominion and authority again, but through my connectedness with God. So independence, doing things my way, is like that seed that is planted, and eventually it produces bad fruit. And like Alan was telling in that story with that man that had done everything right, he was a good man. You know, it's really easy to get fooled by our independence because we think that we're doing what's good and what's right. I mean, we're convinced of it, right? And so it takes that encounter with Jesus a lot of times to see that, oh, what I thought was good was really my idea, not God's idea all along. And at that point, though, that independence can be uprooted and we can be connected again with Jesus. So we have, at that point, what one of the things in Freedom Prayer that happens is we're deceived by this independence. It looks like it's a good thing. But one of the things that happens in Freedom Prayer is you're leading people through these things, then they get to see it the way God sees it. My friend that had that umbrella up that was protecting herself, that's the way she lived all of her life. That seemed like a good plan. It had protected her until this point. It had been a good thing, she thought. But when she saw it the way God saw it, and she heard Jesus say, I want to take care of you if you'll just trust me. And she said, okay, I trust you. Then she found a better plan. That's when she could let go and be really free, is when she chose to trust Jesus to take care of her instead of her taking care of herself. But she would have done that a long time ago, but she had just never seen it that way. She had never seen it that way until we sat down and started to pray about it. In John 15:4, Jesus said, remain in me and I will remain in you. Just as the branch cannot bear fruit by itself unless it remains in the vine, so neither can you unless you remain in me. And I always thought I understood that scripture, but it's meant so much more to me as I've understood this principle. It's those areas where I am remaining in the vine, I'll have good fruit in my life. I don't have to work hard at it. It just happens. But if I have bad fruit in my life, if there's something there that I don't like, I can't control my temper, or I have fear or anxiety. It happened to me not too long ago. I was driving. I don't know why it is when I'm driving and when I'm in the shower, that's when I hear the Lord the most. You know, I've got a busy family and a busy life. Maybe that's the only time I'm alone. I don't know. But I was driving. And my kids are getting older, and I've got a couple of them that are in college, and I was thinking about the future, and I was thinking about what kind of world are they going to inherit? You know, God, I want better for them. And I don't know if sometimes I listen to the news and I just start to be filled with worry. you know, and that's what was happening. I was praying, but I was really voicing this worry, this anxiety that had come on me about my kids and their future. But I realized that tension in my heart. I realized that pressure, and I was like, whoa, wait a minute. That's not supposed to be there. Okay, that's a little piece of bad fruit. I know that tension and that pressure is not supposed to be there in my life, because that's not the life of God that comes from Jesus. And I said, all right, Father, I realize that there's this worry here, not this anxiety. Would you show me where that comes from? And I'm driving while I'm asking this, you know. I'm still driving. And Jesus just showed me, he took me back, and he showed me a place where I really didn't trust him with my kids. I'm the mom. I'll take care of them. You know, I just hadn't really completely trusted him. I thought I was better qualified than he was, you know. I know that sounds ridiculous. When Jesus showed it to me, I was like, oh, yeah, that wasn't a good idea. It wasn't a good idea for me to think that, to believe that, to agree with that thought. You're better at taking care of them than I am. But here's the thing. I said, God, what do you want me to do about that? And Jesus said, give them to me. Give their future to me. You mean I can lay that down? I can do that? Yeah, because I've got a choice. I've got a choice to carry on in independence, or I've got a choice to agree with God. And so I said, you're right, God. I just choose to agree with you. You're better qualified to take care of them than I am. And it was like my kids were right there in my hands, and I was just giving them to God. And it's a moment of faith. It's not a small thing when you do that. It's like, I really am trusting him that he's going to take care of them. But just in that quick little revelation that happened in the car as I'm driving through Cabot, I felt the peace of God come in my heart, the worry and the tension and the pressure. And even God started to show me some things about my kids, about how he had already been working in their life to qualify them to meet the challenges that they're going to face. So instead of being, I went from being worried and tense to being full of confidence and full of faith for my kids and for their future, just in a few moments, because I know that principle that if there's bad fruit, it comes from somewhere. And if I'm willing to see it the way God sees it, and I'm willing to trust him, then that bad fruit, it doesn't get pulled off the vine. It just, at the very root, gets uprooted. And then something new and something alive gets planted there. That seed of God gets planted there, and good fruit can come out of it. I've been doing Freedom Prayer for about 12 years. And so my kids have grown up in a house where mom and dad do Freedom Prayer. And so it became a part of our discipline process. And I remember with my son, he was probably only about 8 or 9 years old. And I don't even remember what the issue was, except that I think he was getting angry. He was just, you know, like, explosive anger. And so it was a discipline problem because, you know, I don't know what he did, but it's something that he needed discipline for. So I sent him to my bedroom that was the thing that we did. He went to the bedroom to sit on my floor and wait for me. And the way we did discipline in our house, he was supposed to be in there praying, and I go and I pray, and we're both listening to God to hear what God says. And so after a short period of time, I went back in and met with my son, and I said, okay, so I've been praying. Have you been praying about what just happened? And he's like, I don't know. God doesn't speak to me. I don't hear God. I said, well, okay, I do. So let's just talk about this a little bit. I said, I remember what it was now. He was out in the yard, and I asked him to come in and pick up his shoes and take them to the bedroom because he had left them where I told him not to leave them. And he was angry because I interrupted his playtime to come in and do this chore that I'd already asked him to do. That's what he got disciplined for. I said, when you were in the backyard and I called you in to pick up your shoes, you started yelling and screaming. What was going on in your mind when I said that to you? And he goes, I was just mad. It's like, okay, well, let's pray and let's ask Jesus to show you more about that. So I just prayed and I asked Jesus to lead him through that memory. And then I asked Jesus to come and to just come to David. And so David goes, well, I didn't hear Jesus. I said, well, what did happen? Tell me what happened. He goes, well, I just remembered something. I said, well, what did you remember? He said, I just remembered I was a little kid and you were yelling at me. It's like, okay. I said, well, I think we prayed again, and I asked Jesus to take him through that memory. And then I talked to him again, and I said, now what were you, I asked Jesus to show David what he was thinking and what he was feeling in that memory where he was being yelled at when he was a little kid. He's 8, and we're praying for him. So a little kid, what was he, 4, 5, I don't know. And so he said, well, I didn't hear Jesus, but I remember thinking that I'll never get it right. And I said, okay. I said, do you think that a lot when I correct you or when Dad corrects you? And he goes, yeah, I think that all the time. I'll never get it right. It's like, okay. I said, David, I'm going to ask Jesus to come and just speak to you about that thing that you'll never get it right, because that feels true to you right now, doesn't it? He said, yeah, it feels true. So I asked Jesus to come, and David, if you've ever dealt with an angry child, like his whole face shows his anger, his whole body shows his anger. I prayed and I asked Jesus to come, and this time there's a longer pause, and I can see the tension on David's body just start to release, and his face is relaxed, and he kind of leans back a little bit. And I said, David, what happened? He goes, well, I didn't hear Jesus, but that's not true. I said, David, you did hear Jesus. You've been hearing Jesus all along. That's just the way he speaks to you. You know, you just know things. He goes, no, Mom, I just knew it. I mean, a minute ago I knew that I would never get it right, and now I know that that's not true. It's like, I know that's the way Jesus is speaking to you. He speaks to you that way. One minute you know something, and then Jesus comes, and the next minute you know something else. But you know that voice was Jesus because you don't feel angry anymore, do you? And he said, no, I'm okay now. It's like, okay, that's good. It wasn't only good that that lie was taken care of when he was 8 and he didn't have to deal with it until he was 40 or whatever. But here's the other good thing about it. He's now 17. And last year he went to youth conference, summer youth camp. And he came home and he was telling me about how he was ministering to the other kids at youth camp. And he said, Mom, a lot of them didn't realize they could hear Jesus. But he said, I know they can, and I know I can. He said, I know Jesus speaks to me, but not the way he speaks to a lot of other people. It's just like this. One minute I know something, and the next minute I know something else that comes from God. And that's the way I hear God. So here's what I want to encourage you to do. Freedom Prayer, you're going to hear a lot of stuff this weekend. You're going to hear a lot of stuff tomorrow. For some of you who have never heard it before, it's probably going to be like overload. It's way too much. And we're not even going to be able to get through all of it. There's going to be things in the manual that we don't get to. But what I want you to know is you can do this because you can hear God. And that's really all it takes. I think one of the reasons that Alan and I have been doing this so long is because God made us stubborn people. And we just won't let go of things. We just won't give up. And maybe that's one of the reasons why we're here now teaching you guys, you know. And I'm just telling you, if you just don't give up and you keep listening, Jesus will lead you. And he'll lead the people you're praying for. And there's no reason why you can't do the same things that we've been telling you stories about tonight with your family, with your children, with your friends. That's how we started. Alan and I have been friends for over 20 years. Alan and Jeannie started praying for me because I was their friend. When Alan called, he actually called to talk to Chris. It's probably, I don't know, 12, 13 years ago, maybe longer. He called one day to talk to Chris. We didn't live in Cabot at that time. We lived way south of Little Rock, but we were friends, and so we would call. And Alan called to talk to Chris, but Chris was out mowing the grass, and he's on the back acre, you know, he's way out there. But Alan was so excited. He started talking to me, and he was telling me about, he said, Holly, we're seeing drug addictions healed. I mean, we're seeing all these things healed through this prayer thing that we're doing. And I was really skeptical because I had been in church for a long time, and I had heard a lot of good things that didn't pan out. And what I knew was, well, there was a lot of stuff that needed to happen for Chris and I. Our marriage wasn't going to last. I'll just tell you that. The course we were on, it was not going to last. For me personally, I felt like I was losing it. Like I'd always been a very capable kind of person, but I was starting to have episodes of anxiety. I was starting to have episodes of amnesia. I just felt like I was coming unglued. And I had always had depression. That had been in my family. I had inherited it. It had always been there. So now I've got four little kids that I would love to be able to enjoy, and I can't laugh with them, and I can't have fun with them, and I can't be happy with them because this cloud is over me all the time. And I'm a Christian, and I love God. I'm serving Him faithfully. I'm on the ministry team at our church, and even though I want to help others and pray for them, I have this depression all the time. And I've asked people to pray for me, and they would pray. I mean, we had home groups. I had people I was connected with, people I was in relationship with, and I would tell them, you know, yesterday driving home, I wanted to drive into the oncoming traffic. I wanted to drive off the bridge. I mean, it's just like all I could do to stay on the road. And they would pray for me, but nothing touched that depression ever. It was always there, to the point where I just got tired of telling them about it because there was nothing they could do. I knew they loved me, but there was nothing they could do. So Alan called and was telling me all these stories, and I didn't put this in the manual, so I'll tell you. Chris and I had, after Alan told us this, you know, Chris and I had this big argument one Sunday afternoon. And Chris went in and made a phone call. And he went into the bedroom and made a phone call. And he comes back out. And he says, I called Alan, and this is all your fault. And so you're going to go to him for freedom prayer. I thought, right, buddy, give me the car keys and I'm gone. But I'm not going for freedom prayer. I just may never come back, you know. And I was just really, really angry. I was angry at Chris. I was angry. Now I'm angry at Alan. Because of what Chris told me he said, which Chris will say he never said, and he probably didn't, because I'm telling you, at that point, there was a lot of demonic interference in our life and in Chris and I, my relationship. And we realized that later, partly as a result of freedom prayer, that he would say something, and between his mouth and my ears, there was a complete disconnect. Like this, God actually showed me a picture of this demon standing between us, and interpreting what Chris said to me and then interpreting what I said to Chris. So you can imagine what our communication was like. So anyway, it comes time for my appointment to go see Alan, and it was about a 50-minute drive between our house and Cabot. And so I get in the car, and I'm still fuming, and I'm still thinking I may or may not show up in Cabot. You know, I don't know where I'm going, but I don't know if I'm going there. But I'm praying. I'm on the highway and I'm praying. And the Lord just came to me so gently, and He said, Holly, what if this is the answer that you're looking for and you're so angry that you miss it? And then it's like He just let me think about that. And I was like, yeah, that would be really stupid. It'd be really stupid to let my anger interfere with what God wanted to do. I could set this anger aside and just go try it out and see what happens. And so that's what I decided to do. I said, all right, God, I'll just set this anger aside. I'll set aside this anger at Chris. I'm going to set aside this anger that I have now toward Alan. I'm just going to set that aside, and I'm going to give you a chance. I'm going to give you a shot at this. So I went to Alan and Jeannie's house, and we went into the office, and they prayed for me. And I think it was the first or maybe the second time we prayed, but I think it was the first time we prayed, God just revealed, He just started to reveal all this stuff. And one of the main things that He revealed was the attachment of where that depression came from. And when I saw it, there's no way I could have known where that came from without revelation from Jesus. When I saw where it came from and that thing was broken, it was really broken. I got freedom from depression that I had not ever been free of. It was like walking out into the sunlight after being enclosed in a dark room all your life. I didn't know that life could be that way. It was like better than I ever imagined it could be. Now, that wasn't the end of my story. It was the only very beginning, because there was a lot more stuff in my life that had to be sorted out, and it was a pretty long process for me. But I think God took me through that because he was bringing me to the place I am now. And also, God is so good that he rescued me from depression so early on. There was no doubt in my mind that this was the path of healing that he was going to use for me. And not only for me, but for a lot of other people. I want to tell you this too. I was not completely healed. I mean, I still had some pretty major problems, but I couldn't keep my mouth shut. And I started telling all my friends at church about how God set me free from depression, about how God was using this prayer to help people. And so now I've got like 4 or 5 people lined up begging me to pray for them. And I'm a mess. I mean, I'm an absolute mess. I've got free from depression, but I still got all this other stuff. I'm still seeing Alan for freedom prayer and praying for people. And I've not even read the manual. I don't have a manual. You know, I mean, I think I watched some, I started to get material. I started to read it as fast as I could and go through the videos. But the only thing I knew how to do in the beginning was say, Jesus, would you come? And I remember this one lady that I prayed for in our church. And this was before Chris and I were ever a part of this church. This is the other church that I was in. So I've been prayed for 4 times, and now I'm praying for this lady who has some serious emotional problems. But I was too naive to know any of that at the time. She was just my friend, and I wanted to help her. That's all I knew. So I agreed to pray for her. And we were at the pastor's house, and it was the pastor's wife and me, and there were probably about 4 or 5 other ladies in the room, too, who were just curious to see what this was all about. And all I know how to do is say, Jesus, would you come? So I asked this lady, I knew enough to ask, you know, what her presenting problem was, and we'll talk about that tomorrow, the interview, how you get started. So I kind of got started with her, and she was experiencing all this emotional pain and emotional turmoil, and I was just asking her to, okay, just you know, keep feeling that feeling, and I'm just going to ask Jesus to come. Jesus, would you come? All of a sudden, and we go to some memories, they're pretty traumatic. All of a sudden, this lady starts wailing and bawling. She curls up in a fetal position, and she's screaming, and I'm thinking, oh, God. What do I do now? I don't know what I'm supposed to do. I only know one thing. Jesus, please come. Please come. I need you to come. This lady needs you to come. I don't know what to do. And all the other ladies in the room are looking at her and looking at me. And I'm thinking the same thing. I don't know anything else to do except Jesus, please come. And I just kept praying that. And this lady just starts to relax. And she starts to uncurl. And she leans back in the chair, and she says, that was amazing. Like, what? Tell me. Tell us, please. And she was in the middle of this traumatic memory that she thought she had gone through before, but she said obviously there was something else there. So she's gone through that. She's in this memory, and it's like she's reliving this horrible trauma. And she said, when I asked Jesus, when she said, oh, Holly, I heard you say, Jesus, would you come? And I saw him walk in the room. And honestly, I don't remember the rest of her story. I don't remember what she told us. All I know is she went from this horrible pain to peace and calm. And she was good. She was happy. God met her at her point of need because she was willing and because I was willing to take a chance. If you're willing to take a chance, if you're willing to see this out and to try, it will work for you too. I promise you it will.